For the problems that Mark may cause for the following: wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan, and the two of us together, we work on cars. I do normal maintenance on my side, and Alan tricks out trucks and hot rods and stuff like that for other people. So if you have a four-wheel drive, if you have a winch you're thinking about buying, or if you have a lift kit or tires and wheels, and what else do you do?
I do anything you can think throw of. Money at.
All right. But some of the things that you've done is you just had a Jeep in here, and we did front end and back end. We did grills and winches and lights and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we do a lots and lots of lighting. That's something that I enjoy doing, but we do a lot of. Okay. We do, gear swaps. We've been doing a lot of those lately. Wheels, tires, bumpers, accessories, okay. Roof racks.
And that just kind of talks about your experience. That's what we're doing is we can talk about those things intelligently. This isn't an ad for our shop. This is idea that this is what we talk. And I'm an ASE master, and I've been around car repair for since 1979. And even before that, I worked at a gas station in 1968. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing since 1970. Thompson's Auto Repair has been providing expert auto and light truck repair and maintenance services in Mesa. They're the only shops in Mesa, by the way, that I put my name behind and say you can trust them to do your work. They have ASE-certified technicians. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. That's under construction on that rail. But they're as you turn east off Stapley and east, they're down maybe three or four buildings on your right. It's easy, and if you miss their driveway, there's a parking lot right next to it, and you can pull in there. But that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street just east of Stapley. We've got a caller already, Vicky. Oh, let me give you the line, the phone number. If you've got a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Vicky, you're up. How can we help you?
Well, 2 weeks ago, I was on my way home, and I stopped at pulled into a place called Village Market to get a six-pack, because it had been one of those days. And when I started my 97 Cherokee, 247,000 miles, the engine was missing like somebody yanked some spark plug wires off it, or there was a dead cat in the serpentine belt. And so I panicked, opened the hood, nothing. It's still running. I thought, oh, it's only a mile home. It's too late to have it towed anywhere. And I started trying to push it home. And at the first light, it died. I started it up, and it's run perfectly ever since. Now, I had called Phil at 25th Street to see if I should have it towed in, and he said, well, if it's not doing it, they can't troubleshoot it. I was wondering if you could give me a couple ideas of what might have happened.
Well, I think your Jeep Cherokee has a crank or cam sensor or both. And I think that might have been affected by anything. It could be grease. It could be water that's spilling on top of it. There's a lot of different things, but I agree with Bill. It's hard to tell what happened, a couple of days ago. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Did you smell gas?
No.
Okay. Were there any dash lights on?
No.
When you got it started at the intersection, it's at that point it ran perfectly.
Ever since.
And ever since, too.
You said there was a loud squealing noise?
No.
Oh, I think you said like a cat in your serpentine belt.
No. It was running so rough, I thought there was a dead cat in the fan belt.
Oh, okay. I just took that as a noise. Sorry.
The bottom line is there was an unusual noise underneath the hood.
No, it just was running rough.
Okay.
It was missing. The engine was missing. I mean, I say missing. I'm not educated. It was just
drive really it.
Rough.
Drive it till the wheels fall off.
Well, there is nothing anybody can do.
Yeah.
There's nothing anybody can do. But when you say missing, instead of idling smooth like a hummingbird, just it was going ta 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 ta.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Exactly. So that's definitely missing. I think I would have someone give it a visual inspection. Ask Bill to do a visual inspection of the secondary portion of the ignition system, which is the spark plugs and the wires. And another thing that you might do, was it any kind of moisture in the air when you were had this problem? Okay, because I was thinking if there was any moisture in the air, sometimes moisture will cause the old spark plug wires to arc, and that causes the engine to miss. But
they're about a year old.
Yeah, the real question is when it was missing, is it spark or fuel related? And to go in there and start replacing parts is going to cost you a couple of $1,000s. So that's not a wise move. Let me ask you a question, and I know this is a silly one. Do you have towing insurance?
Yes, we have AAA.
Okay, all right. So you're kind of safe there. One other thing that I might suggest to you is talk to your insurance company. And sometimes the insurance, I think for us, on a couple of our vehicles, the towing is like $12 a year. And we can tow it to any shop. We don't have to tow it to the closest shop. There's some of the other road services have different requirements. And oftentimes they'll take you to their shop or they'll take you to the closest shop where my insurance company, I just hand them the bill and they pay it. And so
AAA will tow me to whatever I tell them within 200 miles.
Oh,
okay.
That's great.
But I think you have to pay extra miles, extra mileage charge, but I could be wrong, but I don't care. It doesn't make any difference. But nevertheless, if you have towing insurance and you feel safe about that, I would keep the fuel above the half, the quarter portion of the tank. Have you had the fuel pump replaced on this?
Yeah, about 3 years ago.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd keep it up close to half because if you're gonna get down to a quarter, then the fuel pump is not necessarily cooled and lubricated by the gas in the tank. So I wouldn't flirt with that. I'd just keep it above the quarter mark, and I'd see what happened. But that's all I can offer you is just a guess on what it might be. And if you were my customer, I think Bill should just look at the secondary ignition system and wiggle things around and see what happens. All righty.
Thank you so much. I feel so much better now.
All righty, Vicki. Good luck. Good luck.
I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You bet. It's hard to diagnose those kinds of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And she could waste a lot of time and money just trying to chase it down. And if it's a problem that's starting, then it's going to happen again and continually get worse, I'm sure.
And when it gets worse and easier to find, then that's the time you bring it in. And who's talking is my daughter, Andy. Her and Alan both work at our shop. And so they're both well-skilled and talented with respect to car and car repair stuff. And speaking of stuff that's not needed, let's answer the phone. And Gil, how are you? What can we do? Gil, who have we got, I should say?
Your next caller is Jerry.
Jerry, good morning. Jerry, how can we help you?
Good morning.
Go ahead, sir.
I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. I just acquired a 2005 Grand Jeep Cherokee four-wheel drive that has a Hemi motor in it, the 5.7.
Okay.
And the person we got it off of got it from a dealer that claimed it was a tow-behind vehicle, so the miles aren't accurate. Is that something I can verify? It only has 81,000 miles on it.
I don't think
what do you mean they're not accurate? The vehicle has more or the vehicle has less?
Well, if it's a tow behind, does mileage actually rack up as somebody's pulling it with their RV?
I can't answer that. I don't think I've ever had that question but I'll tell you
what. If the engine's off.
But if the key is on, it's got to. It's seeing.
Well, wait a minute, though, and this is a good discussion. If we put the transfer case in neutral, then are we driving the tail shaft of the transmission? And the answer is no. We've disconnected the transmission from the transfer case. We put the transfer case in neutral. And when we put the transfer case in neutral, then all we're doing is spinning the two drive shafts and the speed sensors on the back end of the transmission. So that's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
So, well, wait a minute, though.
So it won't rack up any miles on the odometer.
Yes, it would not. And the key's going to be on the on position, but it's not going to be on the start or run position. I'll tell you, this is an easy one to do. Just hook a rope to it and drag it around the block when the transfer case is in neutral and the steering is unlocked. And it's going to
if the Speedo is working, it's putting miles on it because it has to see a speed signal, speed sensor signal, in order for it to put miles on it. So if the Speedo's working, then it's going to be putting miles on it.
If the speedometer's okay. working, then that, yeah. you're right. The speed yeah. sensor
so
is then being driven.
So maybe don't drag it around 2 miles or 2 blocks. Just pull it down the street and see if the Speedo's working.
I wouldn't suggest you get on I-10 and start ripping the Tucson. But what I said is, if you go around the block, we'll at least roll the 10th
yes.
to 2nd to
yes.
2 or 3. So if he just tows it to his neighbor house, have a beer, and comes back, it may not roll the speedometer.
Yeah.
But you bring up a good point with respect to the speedometer working. But the speedometer, I don't know if the speedometer is going to work when the key is in the off, but the steering wheel is in the unlock position. So it's if it's an electronic, and if the speed sensor is electronic, and I don't really know on the 05 if it is or not, then if there is no power to the computer, it's not going to monitor speed.
But to unlock a steering wheel, it's got to be the key has got to be on, right?
Not necessarily. Wouldn't that tax the ignition system?
Well, yeah, it would. But I mean, there's pull the key out. You got an on and then a run.
Okay. Yeah. It's like I said, it's a question I've never been asked before.
I don't know.
So I don't know. Well, what does the title say? Does it say A, B, or C?
Well, my son has the title. Actually, what is a kind of weird deal? My son bought the car. I told him if he's not happy with it, I'd buy it for him. So I'm getting it this weekend. And I haven't seen the title yet.
Okay. The title will more than likely be A, B, or C, and of course you want A. I want to tell you that I've towed lots of vehicles behind our motorhome, and I've never racked up miles on any of them. I've had a what was that one?
Suzuki Samurai and Suzuki Grand Vitara.
Both of those, mm-hmm. And we had a little Ford truck or a small truck we pulled at one time. So we've never racked up mileage on anything that we've ever towed.
Yeah. And you got, I mean, for an 05 and 81,000, that's low mileage.
Yeah.
But then they said it's got incorrect mileage because it's been towed. So that kind of, to me, it doesn't.
Well, that.
What they stated was, you know, the mileage is so low because it was a tow behind vehicle behind the RV. So that's why for the
year,
mileage was so low. But then I didn't know if it racked up. They sort of enticed that. The vehicle's towed behind, so those miles aren't really accurate. But it's so clean that I believe it is.
Okay.
Sure.
That makes more sense.
That
makes more sense. What they're saying is this vehicle may have twice the miles of the 80,000, but it was tow miles where the motor wasn't running, and we weren't working on the brakes, and the only thing that was really wearing out is the tires
mm-hmm.
when you're towing it like that. So and he's saying that he's trying to explain 80 for a car that's 12 years old.
Sure.
And
that makes sense.
But I still think, you know what? Run a Carfax on it. Just run a Carfax on it. The Carfax will kind of tell you everything you need to know, and it'll also tell you if the mileage is suspect, and it'll also tell you if it's wrecked. And those are things that could happen.
There's a discrepancy somewhere along the way.
Anywhere, a discrepancy, and he brings up good points. So, thank you, Jerry. Good luck to you, buddy. Thank you very much. And the lines are open, 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan, my son, and Andy, my daughter. And between all of us, we've got 50, 60 years worth of auto experience. Andy has worked the front counter for our repair shop for about 61 years.
Yeah.
And Alan has been working on cars. And his early years were kind of tough on me, but it's been really great for the last 15.
What?
Crickets.
Yeah. Crickets.
Wait a minute. The early years?
Yeah.
What was the problem?
When you made mistakes like all the rest of us do. So when you over-torqued lug nuts and you stripped them.
Very seldom.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, then you're different than the rest of us. All righty. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. They've been rebuilding transmissions in the Phoenix area since 1968. Phil and his staff are really transmission diagnostic experts. So if you have a problem and you're in Phoenix and you want to take it by a shop and have them go with you on a drive and you can duplicate the problem, they do that for free. So obviously Monday mornings and Friday afternoons are kind of tough, but try to work it around those two particular times. He's at 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the street. Like I said, he's been in that same location since 1968, and they really do know transmissions well. Automatic transmission exchange. Let's go to the phones, and we'll start with Jack. Jack, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, Mark. I got a 94 Chevy pickup, 130,000 miles. My heater worked a couple years ago. I put a new controller in, but when I turn it over to heat, the arrows all light up across and flash, and I don't get any heat out of it.
The arrows on the climate control panel?
Yep. Yep, they all light up all the way across. I've got the doors work, but I can't get any heat out of it.
Okay, so, okay, forget the arrows, because you completely lost me. I've never seen that a problem. What I think you should do is go to your heat setting, and then after you drive a while, get out of the truck and feel the two heater hoses that go from the engine to the firewall.
Yep.
And are they both hot?
I don't know. That I have to look
okay.
at.
Okay. All right. So you're going to touch both heater hoses. Now, if both heater hoses are hot, then the problem is going to be with the doors underneath the dash. So we're feeding you cold air, but in reality we have hot water circulating through the heater core. I want you to picture the capital letter Y, okay? On the left arm up high is cold air. On the right arm is hot air. And where the two Ys meet the tree trunk, there's a door there. And so if the door swings to the right, you get only cold air. If it swings to the left, you only get hot air. If it's in the middle, you get Luke. So if both heater we just start at the basics. I don't know if you have a problem with the climate control head. I don't know if that's it. I don't know if we're missing a sensor. I don't know if it's lost sight of its ability. I wanted, though, if you don't have a heater, let's start at the basics and work our way forward. Another thing you can try if you want is disconnect the battery on the positive and the negative side.
Okay.
Touch the cables together, not the battery terminals together, but touch the cables. Then just let it sit for 30 minutes, and it's kind of a reboot.
Okay.
And then put the positive on first, the negative on second, reset your clock and stuff like that, and go drive it and see what happens. So let's try a reboot first, okay?
All right, and I can get to everything if I just take the bottom cover off? Underneath?
You mean as far as the dash is concerned?
Yeah.
Have you ever been underneath the dashboard yet?
Well, I've already started taking the box off underneath, but no, not up under the dash.
On a 1 to 10 scale, when you start going after the blend door or the blend door actuator, whether it's vacuum operated or electronic, on a 1 to 10 scale, I'm only going to let a technician that's at an 8 level go in underneath the dash. And here's why. If you let the 2 level guy go in, you're going to end up buying a whole lot of parts that he's broken trying to get in there. And he just doesn't understand that there's a hidden screw here and a hidden screw there, or this snaps in and out or whatever. So the damage, there's a huge risk in going in underneath the dash. There's no additional dollars, but that's why you use your best tech.
Or so the dash has to come off.
Not necessarily the pad. Oh. We're going to do a lot, but there's other stuff that we're also going to do. We're going to physically check to see if we have any external parts of the blend door that we can watch work. And stuff like that. So there's I'm going to think the diagnostic fees, and normally I would say $75 to $125.
Yeah.
I'm going to go up from there. Going to go up to $100 to $150. And then I'm going to tell you also, the possibility exists, and I'm telling you 20% of the time, the diagnostic fixes the problem. So it's $110 to find it. And a dollar to fix it. Plug this back in. You know what I'm saying?
So, that's a bad idea.
Yeah, don't count on that, though. But 20% of the time, the diagnostic will fix it. Okay?
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Hey, hang on, Gil. I just want to cover something else real quick here. A customer tells us this story. They went in to a shop. Okay, we got two callers. He went into a shop, and they needed 100 things that needed attention. and they gave him a list, mm-hmm. and it was $5,732 worth of repairs recommended
on a 2007 Acura that had 109,000 miles.
Okay, thank you for bringing the car up.
Yeah.
So we're on an Acura 2007. It's 11 years old, has 109,000 miles. So, and just to be quick, it has a power steering hose leak. It needs a power steering flush. It needs an engine mount on the right side, an engine mount on the left front, an engine mount on the back. All of them are collapsed. The compliance bushings, which are lower control arm bushings, they're bad. That's $583. And so this power steering pump and everything else is $1,300. The valve adjustment is $512. The serpentine belt's $352. The cabin filter's $90. The wipers are $70. $35 for the air filter. Spark plug's $308. Fuel system $296. Air filter box bolts $30. $5,734, $32 in repairs.
He takes his whole original symptom is a vibration when braking,
okay.
when coming down hills. So that's what he took it in for.
Okay.
So
there's nothing in here about brakes or fixing
them. There was a couple different shops involved, two or three different shops involved, and one shop said that that the mounts were the vibration issue, okay. and that's where the whole thing just got very
ugly.
Yeah.
Convoluted, so to speak.
Yes, very.
All right. So at the end of the day, a shop that we respect mm-hmm. took a look at this.
Sure.
They said nothing is needed except the air filter box bolts mm-hmm. and to fix the vibration if the front brakes or have the rotors warped or something in the front brake area.
Yeah, the rotors were warped and the pads were fine, they said.
Okay, so the repair at the end of the day to resurface the rotors and fix the vibration when coming down a hill mm-hmm. and fixing the broken air bolts was $150.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else the other shops said didn't need to be done.
No.
And they talked also about all these leaks. Well, there's a difference between leaking on the ground and you adding fluid and seeping or wetness.
Mm-hmm.
And the wetness means nothing. The seeping means nothing. It has to either drip on the ground or you're adding fluid. Those are the key words. So when we come back, we'll talk about that. And we're also going to take our two callers. We're going to take a quick break when we come back. But think about this. $5,732 worth of repairs recommended. And at the end of the day, his symptoms are fixed for $150. And at least one other shop looked at this that we respect and said only one thing they agreed with. So we'll be back. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to just, Arthur waited through the break, so I'm not going to do any commercials. I'm going to go straight to Arthur. Arthur, good morning to you. How can I help you?
I've got a 2006 Yukon XL. And when I'm driving, it starts humming some on it. As soon as I let off the gas, the humming sound goes away. I'm just wondering what that would be. Would it be the tires, transmission, rear end? I checked the engine with my son running it and couldn't hear any humming there.
Okay. Well, I think if you want to find out if it's engine-related, when you're going down the street at 40 miles an hour, just kind of feathering the throttle, not accelerating and not braking, is the noise there?
Yeah.
Okay. So then what?
Well, not constantly. As soon as I let off the gas, it goes away.
Okay.
It's just there when he's accelerating.
Okay. All right. Wow. I mean, I'm thinking, what's different between load and unload? And then he takes his foot off. That doesn't eliminate any of the fan belts because the belts are spinning. They don't care whether you're throttling up or throttling down. The water pump, the power steering, the air conditioning, none of that cares.
Yeah.
So, you're just going to have to – can you make it happen all the time?
Oh, yeah, it does it all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, now, I drove up to fly, came back, and it started about 2 weeks later after that. They started doing that.
Okay. Can you feel the noise at the steering wheel, the seat of your pants, or on the floor? Can you feel it?
No, there's no vibration at all. It's just a humming sound. Okay. And then it goes, as soon as I left the gas, it stops.
Is it possible that the fan clutch is locked up?
That's one thing I was thinking of. I'll have to check that.
Okay. And if you're cruising down the highway at 60, 70 miles an hour and the fan clutch is locked up, it feels like it's in second gear. The motor sounds racing, like the motor's racing, and there's going to be a hum associated with that because the fan clutch is locked up, and people will take it to a transmission shop and say, hey, it feels like it's in third gear, but it won't go to high, and as a result of that, then that's kind of the deal. Yeah. So, you know, do you have a shop that you deal with?
I just took it through to the dealer, or I just took it down here to Midas.
Okay. All right. What part of town do you live in?
I'm on the Baseline West Side.
Baseline and what?
On the West Side. Oh. Baseline.
Okay. I understand. Well, the best thing the shop is going to want is if you can make it happen, and you stop by on a Wednesday around noon, and you say to the owner who recognizes you, hey, I got this noise. I can make it happen. Can you send your best tech with me? And I promise not to have him for an hour. I'll bring him back in 15 minutes because I can show him what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I think that's all you need to do, Oscar. And that's usually free, especially if I recognize you. Okay?
Yeah. All righty.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And let me tell you who brings this show to your radio. S&S Tire is one of the shops. They have three locations in West Phoenix, in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. At S&S Tire, they have a comprehensive line of tires and many different brands of the same size. No matter whether you want a wheelbarrow tire or a huge industrial tractor or a farm tractor, they've got tires for that. But what S&S Tire really is good for is you take your car in, and they will give you three prices for good, better, best set of tires. And then that way you can decide what you want to spend. Now, if you're going to keep the car forever, you might want the better or the best. But if it's a lease or you're going to sell it, maybe you just want the good. So the idea is that they can fluctuate the pricing and the quality and give you what you want. They also they'll balance your tires, and they do an alignment suspension work, which is all related to tire wear. So it's kind of a one-tire shop. That's S&S Tire, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. A little earlier, we were talking about where someone had gone in and recommended $5,732 worth of repairs.
Mm-hmm.
Let's kind of go over this. The vibration that he ended up having fixed was he's coming down the hill, and when he applies his brakes, the car shakes.
Uh-huh.
But the minute he applies the brakes, the car shakes, and when he lets go, the car quits shaking.
Mm-hmm.
That never is motor mounts.
No.
And so they say that all three of the engine mounts are broken.
Uh-huh.
And the bill on all those is that is almost $1,900 for three engine mounts and all the labor. Think what would have happened. Now, this was a brake rotor problem.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't a motor mount. So if he would have authorized almost $2,000 worth of engine mounts, and he would have come back down from Payson, there would have been trouble. Because they wouldn't fix his problem.
Yeah.
Then you start talking about the compliance bushing that are cracked. Tell me what you think about the word cracked.
Well, I mean, I think the bushings in general in our industry, everybody has such a different spectrum of when they should be replaced. I mean, we see, you know, ones that come in that have surface cracks on them, and sure, they're cracked, but they're more of a surface crack. The bushing's not coming out, not falling apart. You're not having any other symptoms, and in that case, we wouldn't say do anything on them. But if you have, you know, a clunk or, you know, the bushing's completely coming out, that's a whole different ball game.
That's exactly right. And the clunk is a big deal. You're stopped at a traffic light and you give it the gas and there's a clunk as you move forward. And then at no other time until you brake. And when you brake, there's another clunk. And that's because these lower control arms and bushings are moving forward and backward.
Mm-hmm.
And the rubber part of the bushing, the rubber part is a gasket between two big metal things. So there's a shaft, and then it's covered with a big piece of marshmallow rubber,
uh-huh.
and then there's a bracket that goes around that.
Yes.
And it keeps the two pieces of metal from each other.
Yes, so the bushing itself just looks like a big donut. It's
a big black
rubber
donut.
Yeah.
As a result of that, we lose the bushing, and when that happens, then we have the clunk.
Yeah.
So 602-508-0960, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to be here till noon talking about cars. We've got the lines open. We've got four of the five lines open. Miguel's on one of them, but you can give us a call if you'd like, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Miguel, how are you today? What can we do for you?
Doing good. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 2010 Mazda CX-9, currently running 106,000 miles. Feels weird. I can turn on the vehicle in the morning and let it warm up for about 5-6 minutes. It could be less, it could be more time. When I start going on the car, I can hear like a little rattling in the engine, like a little clacking. I can't figure out what it is. I don't know if it's maybe I need to start using a little thicker oil. I don't know what's going on in there. Maybe it's time to take it into a shop. I'm not seeing any signs, any loss of power or anything like that.
Does it go away after? Does it go away after the vehicle's warmed up?
Well, it goes away after you start driving for a while.
Okay, so yeah. Okay. So what is that time frame? 5 minutes? 10 minutes? Do you know?
Yeah, about 3-5 minutes after driving. Because if the vehicle is just, you know, idling, warming up in the driveway, you don't hear anything. But as soon as you take out of the driveway and you start driving, then you start hearing it, and then it just goes away after you begin driving for about 5 minutes.
Okay. You know what I think it is? I'm going to make an educated guess. I think the valves need to be adjusted.
Would he have a running rough issue with that, though?
Well, we had one not too long ago that had a huge gap where it shouldn't have.
Uh-huh.
And so the exhaust valve wasn't opening as far as it could.
Mm-hmm.
And so that cylinder had a misfire every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously we have to hear the noise. Now,
yeah.
Another thing it could be is an exhaust leak. The clicking noise of an exhaust leak is exactly like the clicking noise of a valve tappet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for customers to determine whether they say they have a clicking noise, but it's really not a click. It sounds like a tick, tick, tick. It's a ticking noise, and that's an exhaust leak.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't that wouldn't cause it to run rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's more of a clacking than a clicking, you know?
Like okay. A rattle, kind of like a like marbles in a can type of a thing, or?
Yeah, you could say so, yeah.
Okay. And when you rev it up, does the tempo change?
You know what? I try not to go too hard on it when I start hearing it.
Okay.
So.
Well, here's what I want you to do is when you hear it, throw it into neutral and just kind of give it a rev. Drum, 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 and see what happens. We need to know if it's related to the speed of the engine. So we need to know that the faster you go, the faster the clatter is. But the clatter, it could be so many different things. You can turn your air conditioning on and off, and that will kind of tell you if you've got the clatter from the belt area. So when you load the belts by turning the air conditioning compressor on, even though it's cold, and it changes dramatically, that helps us. So if you can make it happen or change it, then you're going to save yourself some diagnostic money because you can show us how to make it happen or how to change it, and that sure helps when we diagnose the problem. Our industry. So, but it is interesting that Andy asked you if it goes away when you warm up, because that's a real key. If you say, and we don't need you to tell us 3 minutes and 32 seconds later it goes away. We're not interested. When the needle gets off the cold and it gets between north of a quarter on the gauge, then the noise goes away. That's good enough for us.
Yeah, that just is indicating that the vehicle has warmed up. You know,
so the vehicle can be warm up, and then it will still do it as soon as I start driving. So it's not necessarily when the vehicle's cold.
Okay, so for instance, it's warmed up and it's clattering, and you shut it off when you go into Quick Trip.
It doesn't clatter when it's idling.
Okay.
As soon as I put it in the gear and I start driving, then I can hear it.
Okay. How can you get the tank down kind of low, and can you put some premium, put 5 gallons of premium in it and see if that changes it?
Okay.
I'm confused.
So you say you start the car, say you start it cold in the morning, it's been sitting all night. You start it in the morning, you let it idle, and the noise is not present, correct?
Correct.
I usually
like to let it warm for about 3-5 minutes.
Okay, and then you drive it, and the rattle noise is present, but it does go away.
Yeah.
Okay, so the rattle, when you're not in the car and it's warming up, the rattle's not there, the clatter's not there. But the clatter is only there when you hit the accelerator.
Yes.
Okay. You know, that could, I mean, I'm dreaming here, but that could be the back of a belt fly that has flown off. You know, where the back layer of the belt comes off? Mm-hmm. I mean, in the old days, that would happen because you're sitting there idling and there's no load and the RPM's low. When you start speeding up the fan and speeding up the motor, then all of a sudden this piece of 3 inches of the back of the V-belt is flapping around and causing a noise. It's just something we're going to have to listen to.
Yeah, I think, too, I say fairly easy, but if it's present all the time, that's going to be easier to find.
Yeah.
So a shop could find it decently quick, I would say.
You could help yourself, too. You can teach your wife or your girlfriend or your son or somebody how to make it happen, and you open up the hood. And if you take a piece of heater hose that's 3 feet long and you put it to your ear, and then you start waving the end of the heater hose around the engine compartment, I promise you, when you get close to that noise, you're going to hear it. I promise you. So, you know, we have a stethoscope that we use, and some guys will use some 3/8 clear line, and they'll stick one end in their ear, and they'll start waving it around underneath the engine compartment. When you get close to it, and that's how we find vacuum leaks sometimes. Mm-hmm. We find vacuum leaks that way and noises. So if you were able to say, hey, here's a piece of heater hose that's 3 or 4 feet long, put this next to your ear and put the hose right there. Can you hear that? And then move the hose away. See how it goes, the noise goes away? Bring it back. Okay, that's what I want you to fix. When you do something like that, you just saved yourself $50 in diagnostic charges because you just told us how to make it happen. All righty?
Sounds good. Okay. Thank you very much.
You betcha. Thank you. Noises are tough. Noises are tough. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We've got about another 5, 6, 7 minutes in this segment. Then we're going to come back for another hour. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my daughter, Andy. And Andy's been in, as you can tell, been in the auto repair industry for a very, very long time. She's worked the front counter. She has, she's managed the technicians and the workload, and she understands the relationship between the symptom, the diagnosis, and the repair. So when someone's coming off of Payson, from Payson, and they hit their brakes and the front end starts shaking real bad, you know that's not motor mounts when they let go of the brakes and the noise vibration goes away.
Yeah.
So that's pretty easy. That's one of the easier ones. So speaking of people that know how to diagnose, Air Park Auto is up in North Scottsdale, Northeast Scottsdale. There are a couple of blocks south of Frank Lloyd Wright, and there are a couple of blocks west of the 101. They've been around since 1985. They're on Raintree, east of Hayden. Nadine, the owner and operator, has been there since the beginning. Her husband, Stacy, was a friend of mine, and when they built in 1985, Renee and I and Stacy and Nadine were all friends. Stacy passed away, and Nadine has decided, and it was a wise decision, to keep the shop and keep it running because she, like Andy, has a good handle on car repair. So Air Park Auto is a state-of-the-art clean and green facility. They have the diagnostic tools, they have the technicians, and they know how to diagnose and repair small vehicles, trucks and cars, as well as just about anything that takes gas. So if you live in North Scottsdale, I would like to suggest, if you don't have a car repair shop, then you might want to stop by Air Park Auto Service for an oil change and see how they do for you. That's an easy way to introduce yourself. If you walk into an auto repair shop, they do a $16.95 oil change, and then they hand you an estimate for $5,732. You might want to get a second opinion. Getting back to that same thing, and we don't have any callers right now, so...
Nope.
Oh, we do. Who have we got, Gil?
Chris is next.
Hi, Chris. Good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning to you. I was just listening to that last caller, and I had the exact same problem. And I had called you when I had the problem.
Okay.
But what I ended up doing was a top end clean with, if I could tell you the brand name of the stuff that I used, I will.
Okay.
It was Seafoam.
Okay.
Uh-huh, that's a good brand.
And it cleaned up that rattling noise. They pump it into the the plenum for the injection system.
Uh-huh.
And it was fine. It was
okay.
Like two quarts of the Seafoam, and then, you know, drive it around a little bit, and then add another a bottle of that with your next fill-up. And it's been fine ever since.
Okay. What he's talking about is that we are using the suck portion of the engine, the intake manifold,
yep.
Where we draw air through the filter, then we take it into the intake manifold, and it's delivered to all the cylinders. Now, he's talking about a problem of carbon in the cylinders,
mm-hmm.
And that's the noise that, was it Oscar? No, Miguel. That's the noise that Miguel likely had. So by inhaling this liquid, which is really a good product,
uh-huh.
But it's the same as carburetor cleaner and a lot of other problems.
Yeah.
So we're going to inhale this liquid into the engine. We're going to keep the idle running up high, and we're going to go after the carbon that's inside the cylinders. Usually that carbon is built up by somebody who's very soft-footed. Most guys are going to throttle up really hard at a traffic light every once in a while.
So you're saying you've never had this problem on any of your vehicles?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And neither has your brother, and neither has your mother, okay? So
yeah.
It's in our family.
Yeah, I'm guilty of it as well.
Yes. So the idea is we suck this in, and we're going to reduce the compression ratio by taking some of the carbon and sending it out the tailpipe. So thank you for that, because that's something I missed.
Sure.
And I missed that clue.
Well, it really did.
Okay.
It really did.
All right. Well, thank you
so
for
much.
That. Thank you for that. Oh, see?
I think that Seafoam is a good product. I mean, I've heard good things about it.
You know, there's lots of problems. Here's the stuff I don't like. There's all these chemicals out there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you buy our chemicals, then we're going to put you on our website. And if somebody plugs in your thing, then we're going to send them to you. And you're going to have a new customer, and you're going to be able to sell them all the other stuff that they need.
Yeah.
How many times do you hear that?
A bunch. And I think we would say use the products in this situation when you have a symptom. But a lot of we've talked about it before, a lot of the fuel injection services, and that's one of the things that the shop recommended on the Acura, he wasn't having any symptoms. So in that case, doing all these additives and flushes and all this other stuff when you have no symptoms, we wouldn't, you know.
It's a waste of time.
Yeah, and money.
And that fuel injection service on this estimate on this Acura was $296. The issue is this. If you think you're going to Seafoam your car to love you and last forever, you're making a big mistake. That's a stupid idea, and it ain't going to happen, because your car has one brain, and it's the electronic brain that delivers spark and fuel.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have feelings. It doesn't know who's driving the car. It just knows how to deliver spark and fuel. So your car's not going to love you if you stick stuff in the tailpipe, in the tank, in the engine, in the radiator, in the air cleaner, and you wax the windshield. It's not going to love you anymore. So symptom-driven is what I'm all about.
Yeah.
If you have a symptom, then we fix it. And sometimes we're going to tell you this is a guess, and you have to agree to the guess, and then we'll make the guess. So sometimes you have to guess a little bit to narrow down the problem. So in that particular case, just inject some intake cleaner, and it changes the noise for the better, and now we're going to finish the job.
Yeah.
And so we're going to move after it. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. So if you have a car question or comment, or if you have something that you fixed yourself, I'm all ears, because I can learn from you as well. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Andy, and she's my daughter, and she's been around our car repair company for an easy 25 years. And today, she actually, I'll tell you what her business card says. It says that she, what does it say?
Full-time babysitter of the men at Salem Boys.
That's exactly right. Full-time babysitter of the men at Salem Boys.
Yeah.
And that perfectly describes your job perfectly. Gil, can you pot up the beginning of that and then let me know when you're ready? Andy's never heard the spot about seek professional help about Mark, and I was hoping we could play that again. So I don't know if you can snippet that out of...
This station is not responsible for the problems that Mark may cause for the following. Wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
That is awesome. Awesome. How long has that been playing?
Well, actually, it's been playing for quite a while. Jeremy, one of the engineers at KKNT, he snuck that in one time, and he thought I would be mad. And I said, I know my wife and family helped you make that.
But, no.
I know you didn't, but it's part of... I ask for permission to put it at the beginning of the show, even before the intro. And they honored me by doing that.
That is hilarious.
It is. It really is. It opens the scale for just about anything. You know, it's a rough and tumble show, so it's easy to get sidetracked.
That's hilarious.
I'm going to take Bruce in just a second, but Larry Harker's Auto Repairs at 38th Avenue and Indian School, and he is a great guy for diagnostics. I send cars from the west side, the northwest, the southwest, the entire west side of the shop, north to south. I send to Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob's been working there since 1967. Bob and Ellen own and run it. They have auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, but he's really good at that one-time-only kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I honk the horn and my wipers come on. That kind of stuff. If you start off with nobody can fix this, I've had it to three other shops, that's exactly the one Bob will jump in and fix. So if you need your vehicle serviced and you live near 38th Avenue and Indian School, then go ahead. But you can drive from anywhere in the valley, and he's one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met. Bob at Larry Harker's Auto, the owner, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bruce, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, and hello to everyone. I've got a vexing cooling problem on a 99 Nissan Pathfinder.
Okay.
It's got about 240,000 miles on it, and just recently, I'm losing coolant, can't tell where. It's not down the crankcase. I'm looking at maybe a little moisture residue in the oil cap. Not much. Real strange thing is, if I turn the heater on, I'm getting... moisture in the cab, coolant.
Okay.
There's no oil in the radiator cap either. No smell of hydrocarbon there.
Okay.
I'm about to put in about a half a bottle of Bars Leak, but I just thought I'd give you a chance.
Bars Leak is one of the many sealers. We like a different sealer called K-Seal. K as in King. We use that for head gaskets and stuff like that, and the performance of that particular sealer has outperformed anything I've ever had since 1968. So we're hanging our hat, but let's talk about this. The diagnostic procedure is not going to be within your realm, but let me explain it to you. If what you say is true and we got a heater core leak, and we're either going to have a passenger side floorboard wet, or there's a drain that goes from the evaporator case outside the vehicle onto the ground. So we're going to take a camera and go up that rubber drain and see if we can see wetness, green wetness, orange wetness, whatever coolant you got. We're also going to pressurize the cooling system, and we're going to pinch off both heater hoses and come back in 20 minutes. And if the cap is a 15-pound cap and I've got 15 pounds of pressure in it, and I come back in 15 minutes and it still has 15 pounds of pressure in it, I go, chi-ching, the rest of the cooling system is intact. Then I undo my two clamps, and I walk away and come back in 15 minutes, and I got 5 pounds of pressure in it. So I know the heater core is leaking, and that's going to be expensive.
So he could do, you know, the seal he's talking about, or he could bypass the heater core. The downside to bypassing it would be, obviously, you'd have no heat, but the upside
three days
is... yeah, the positive is it's so much...
Less money
to bypass it than it is to replace it, but...
But you're going to lose your defrost, too, and that's kind of a problem. Yeah. And here's something else, too. You're going to have better air conditioning, because without pumping hot water through that heater core, which is in the evaporator case, the same place the evaporator is for your air conditioning system, you're going to probably gain 2, 3, 4 degrees. That's why a lot of the old-timers want us to put a ball valve on one of their heater hoses so they can shut off the hot water of the heater, because we get a little better cold air out of your AC. So I want you to take both hands and rub the carpeting very briskly on the passenger side of the car. If there's any wetness there and your hands come up and they have a slight oil consistency on them, then your heater core diagnosis is good. Here's the good news. If this was a head gasket, I noticed you kept talking about the oil cap and the radiator cap and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
If this was a head gasket, here's the classic symptoms. Hey, Mark, I drive around all day long and everything's fine. I park my car at night, and the next morning I start it up, and it misses kind of bad for a little while.
Yeah.
I'll rev it up, and then all of a sudden it mysteriously quits, and everything's fine throughout the day. Now, I am seeing that I'm having to add a quart of coolant into the overflow every once in a while when it drops below the add mark. Bingo. We got a head gasket problem. So, in your particular case, I think you've diagnosed it quite well. I think you're right about the heater core being a problem. And if you go to defrost, I think you're going to find that there's droplets of coolant on the bottom of your windshield that are going to be oily.
Yep.
And when that happens, then you are definitely right. Now, I want you to look at the hoses and the connections outside in the engine compartment. And if it's got
yep.
screw clamps on it, I want you to put a half a turn or so on each one of those screw clamps. Because here's the deal. If the clamps come loose, we're going to squirt coolant into the evaporator case. Okay? We're going to lose
yep.
coolant, but it's going to go into the case and out the drain. It's not really going through the heater core. You're still going to get the same activity, but put a couple of, you know, put, don't break anything. And also, with your left hand, support the connection. So with your hand in connection, then you take your nut driver and put, you know, just try to put however much you can put on it and then see what happens. Okay?
Okay. I will say that the carpet's bone dry.
The carpet's... Okay, okay.
And I can lose more than a gallon of coolant in a day.
Oh,
wow, that's a big leak.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, that changes it, too. Well, yeah, that changes it. You could go rent, I think, a pressure tester at some auto parts store, but you're going to... You know, and again, do you have any needle nose vice grips?
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to not want to use needle nose vice grips to pinch the hose. You're going to want to put some 3/8 fuel line on both of the needle nose so that you're going to squeeze
right.
the hose with rubber. And so if you want to do that, then go rent a pressure tester. And if you lose pressure and then you undo the heater hoses and you lose pressure and you block the heater hoses and you don't lose pressure, then you and I have diagnosed it right. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
As long as it's not the water pump and thermostat on this motor.
No. The water pump's got a weep hole on the bottom of it, so it's going to leak center yeah. motor right behind the thing.
Right.
So no. You didn't say anything about leaking on the ground.
What's that?
You didn't see anything leaking on the ground. You didn't say anything that you saw anything on the ground.
Drips when this thing gets hot.
Okay.
And I get drips off the overflow tank. Not blowing a lot of material.
Okay. Well, if that's the case, does it have a radiator cap? Or is the coolant tank pressurized?
No, it's not pressurized, but it has a coolant cap of 13 pounds. A radiator cap.
Okay, so you're blowing coolant past the 13-pound cap into the overflow, which then overflows the overflow.
Just a little bit.
Okay, well, I'd put a new cap on it, because if it's all of a sudden an 8-pound cap and it's supposed to be a 13-pound cap, then all of a sudden we're in a completely different ballpark.
Okay, I'll look that up. It's currently a 13.
Oh, I know, but it...
If the cap's no good is what he's saying. Right?
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. So the first step might be to replace the cap and see if that takes care of some portion of your coolant loss.
Yeah. See, what we do, we take the cap and we put it on an adapter on the same thing. We take our pressure tester and we take your cap off and we put the pressure tester on the cap. Now we start pumping it up. Okay? I look at the cap. It's
right.
13 pounds. I'm going to put 13 or 14 in your system. I have an adapter that I put on that, and I screw your cap on the adapter. Then I start pumping. I want to see get to 13, and then when I push again and it goes to 14, I want to hear because it's letting go of the extra pressure. But if I'm pumping it up and it's 6 pounds, I hear I know the cap's bad.
2 minutes.
So that's what I'm talking about.
I may be, besides the heater core, I may be just losing a little bit in the heads up, because I do about 100 miles a day.
Well, here's what bothers me, though. You said that you moisture's coming out of the vent, and the overflow has nothing to do with that. So there's no transition. It's hard for me to come from I got a bad radiator cap and I'm overflowing the coolant jug to where I've got a mist coming out of the vents in the cab. That's a jump I can't make. So
the last thing would be the pressure test first.
Yeah, the pressure test and check the cap.
Clamping down and bypassing.
Yep, that's the first thing.
Excellent.
All right, good luck. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I want to go back to the $7,000, $5,000 estimate, okay? All right. Power steering hose is leaking. It's not needed. Like we talked about wetness. Mm-hmm. We talked about wetness versus a leak. Mm-hmm. If the customer, and the customer should say, oh, I have a power steering leak. Oh, where's it at?
Well, the high-pressure hose is leaking. And we're going to do a flush, and between the two of them, it's almost $200.
Well, I haven't been adding any fluid. I haven't seen anything on my driveway.
Oh, it needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. Well, how come I'm not adding any fluid, and how come I don't see anything on my driveway? How come I never see that?
Yeah, I think before anything, people, because a lot of people don't even check their fluids these days, so I think typically you'll hear, well, I'm getting a noise when I'm turning the steering wheel.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
Okay. Before they, I mean, because a lot of people, like I said, don't even check their fluids. So once you're hearing the noise, it's definitely low.
And you have to be, there has to be an accompanying leak.
Yes.
So we're low because we're leaking. So there has to be something somewhere.
Sure.
And if the power steering pump's leaking, as you drive down the road, if it's leaking, it's going to be blowing. The drops are falling, and then the wind underneath it carries it across the bottom of the chassis.
Sure.
So you should be able to lift it up in the air and see and follow the oil trail right to where it's leaking.
Yeah.
That's so. Anyway, three engine mounts, and then they go. They got greedy.
Power steering hose and flush. That's $200, and then we need a power steering pump. Not only is the hose leaking, but the pump is leaking, and that's $1,300.
So now all of a sudden, we're in big-time dollars for somebody who doesn't have anything leaking on the ground and isn't adding any fluid because of the symptoms you described.
Yeah.
It's kind of a
Or a whine.
A whine because your fluid's low. Then you got the serpentine belt, poor condition, depends on the mileage, and that's $352. The cabin filter, they pulled the cabin filter out of this, we're told, and it was clean. They put it right back in, shop number two, put it right back in and said, you don't need the cabin filter, which is $90. Mm-hmm. The wiper blades are streaking. Who the hell would know if the wiper blades are streaking except the person that's driving it?
Yeah.
You see what
or
I'm saying?
If the tech turned them on and used them, yeah.
Okay, $70 for the wiper blades. Mm-hmm. Okay, then spark plugs, and they looked at the mileage and they go, oh, based on your spark plugs, you need spark plugs. But they didn't say, when was the last time you put plugs in it?
Yeah.
And then fuel system service for $296. Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things where you say, what symptom are you going to fix with your suggested repair?
Yeah.
And that's when you hear, because they're not going to have an answer. But if I was going to recommend a fuel system, I'm going to fix the clatter in the morning, I'm going to fix the pre-ignition, I'm going to fix the hard starting, and you have an erratic idle, I'm going to fix that. Now, not all of those, but one of those I'm going to fix with this.
Yeah.
So those are the symptoms you would have that would necessitate a fuel system service. 602-508-0960. The phone will be answered by Gil. Gil just recently got out of jail. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he did. He just got out of jail, and he's running the board. He's a really good guy. He's exactly the kind of guy that you'd want living next door to you, but at nighttime, you'd want to keep track of him.
And there's where we need the disclaimer.
And that's where we need the disclaimer. 602-508-0960. Gil will answer your phone. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Andy. She's a seasoned veteran of the car repair industry, and she's the babysitter for all the guys at the shop, including me. Let's go to the phones because we're locked up right now. Jim, you're up first. How can I help you?
Well, I've got a 98 Mazda B4000, four-wheel drive, manual transmission. And it, about a month ago, it picked up a whine in third gear and fifth gear.
Ew.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, really, advice on this. Should I be looking for a new vehicle?
No. Are you thinking about buying a new one? A new one.
It's a 98, so...
How many miles does it have on it?
About 220.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, I think with three and four, you got a noise. But if you're going to buy a new vehicle, let me tell you that I can buy you and your wife dinner twice, and I can fix this for less than the tax and license on a new vehicle.
Okay.
That's number one. Number two is even if this was a $2,000 job, that truck's worth $200 a month to you. So at 10 months, you have made up in use the cost of the $2,000 repair. Here's what you have to be careful of. You got to look that shop in the eye and you say, I'm not playing for guessing. You're telling me you're going to take the transmission out, rebuild it, and put it back in. You're going to fix this whine in third and fourth gear. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Third and fifth, actually. But
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So another thing that I would think you'd want to do is let's drain and refill the transmission, and let's make sure we use the right fluid. And that doesn't mean we have to go to Toyota or Nissan or Mazda. We don't have to do that. There are specifications that we can add Chevron or Valvoline or Shell. We can add fluid to that. So let's just change the fluid and see. Sometimes the fluid change will make it worse, but there's no question that your transmission problem is inside. And I'll challenge you on this. When the transmission is making noise, I bet if you take your hand off the knob and slide it down to the shaft of the shifter that you can actually feel it. If you move the shifter 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 9 o'clock, if you just move it enough but don't throw it out of gear, I'll bet you can feel the noise in those two gears.
Yes, it's a manual transmission.
I understand.
And there is some vibration in it. For me, it's really hard to tell whether the vibration is just normal vehicle vibration or in the shifter. I can feel it in the clutch when I'm putting it in the third gear.
Mm-hmm.
I have taken it to Action Auto and had them listen to it, and they said, yes, there's a whine. Then they said something about the cluster in there for third and fifth gear.
Yes.
And they said, you know, at this point, there's nothing we can do about it. They checked the fluid. The fluid was changed about 10,000 miles ago. Do you think it's worth changing it again?
No.
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 I would say, too, you can't really, it sounds like a transmission shop needs to look at this, and you can't really make a decision until you know what the cost of rebuilding it or the fix is. At this point.
Yeah, and let me. I noticed he said four-wheel drive, which added another $200 to the R&R time. Take it out, put it back in, because now we got to deal with a transfer case.
But it also makes his car more valuable.
Oh, it does, and there's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a matter of, I'm going to tell you that there's no doubt in my mind that you're going to spend $2,500 or more to pull it out, fix it, and put it back in. I mean, That's the minimum I'm thinking, because I'm thinking we've probably got $600, $700, $800 in and out.
Yeah.
And from there, we've got to take the transmission somewhere and have it built. Yeah. Now, we would send ours to a shop that doesn't do retail.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, Tom at Action has access to A&S Transmissions up there, Alger Stowers, and he's also a wholesaler, but Tom could pull it. I probably would take it to Alger and let him drive it.
Yeah, or he could go to Adolph's.
Yeah, he could go to Adolph's,
too. I mean,
that's
a little bit probably farther from you.
But it's if the guy that's going to rebuild it, so Tom, if you said, Tom, who's going to rebuild it if we're going to do this, he says, I'm going to have A&S Automatic and Standard is what it stands for. But he's a wholesale guy. He doesn't take retail traffic. So Tom could take it out and send it to him and say, here, you rebuild this. Once he got the side case off of it, he'd know right away what the deal is. So the transmission guys are really good. But there's only two guys I would trust for that. One of them is North and one of them is South. So I think you'll have to you'll have to use a shop to get to those guys. But that's not a bad idea. But even if it was $4,000, let's pretend it's $4,000. If it's a $4,000 repair, still $200 a month into that is 20 months. So the truck's paid you back in 20 months. The question is what else will happen in that 20 months?
Yeah.
Is this a monster that all of a sudden we have to feed? But again, new tax and license on a new truck is going to be $3,000 or $4,000 no
easy.
Matter what.
Yeah.
Easy, no matter what. So those are the options you have. Okay.
So is that something that I should do right away, or can I just live with the wine for a while and see what happens?
I think if you're going to plan on keeping it and fixing it, you should have it done now, because something is eating itself up there. And right now we have some specific damage, but as soon as we start sending flakes of metal throughout, then all of a sudden we've got all kinds of problems. So if you're going to deal with it, I would certainly deal with it.
Sooner than later.
Thank you for that. Sooner than later. All right. Thank you very much. And Larry, you're up next. How can I help you, Larry?
Hi. We have a 2014 Honda Civic. It is a IC24, the 2.4 liter.
And
it was my grandson's car, and we bought it because it was a Honda, and nothing's ever supposed to go wrong with a Honda. Well, shortly after we got it, it had under 40,000 miles on it, and shortly after we got it, the clutch went out. So we had a clutch put in.
Okay.
Then, after that, the linkage jammed up, and he could get the main, you know, the on numbers, you can get, or the odd numbers, you can get 1, 3, and 5. Yeah. 3, and I guess it was 6, or maybe I have that reversed.
That's okay.
Know.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, something happened in the linkage and the transmission. We took it back to the same guy that worked on the
clutch,
and you know he messed around with it for a long time and got it loose. And I'm not quite sure he knows how he got it loose, but. You know, he got it loose, and he's not a transmission expert.
Okay.
But my thought is, and the concern is,
1 minute.
Does it sound like there's something inherently wrong going with this transmission system?
No. How old's your grandson?
He's 20.
Okay. I think that's where your problem's at.
Is it in the way it's being driven and shifted, do you think?
Well, let me tell you something. I would bet big money that nobody out there that owns a shop is going to say that we've had a Honda Civic with a 24 valve come in from a grandma and have the shift forks bent and blow the clutch at 40,000 miles. That's a 180,000 mile clutch. So when you tie the clutch together with a 20-year-old young man with a 24 valve hot rod Honda, 1 and 1 equals 2. This is not an inherent problem.
We saw a RAV4
I got to take a break.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be right back. Stay right there. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to quickly go through what we got to do, and then we're going to go back to Larry real quick. But Strictly Diesel and Repair Service is up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in Phoenix. Strictly works on diesels, light, foreign, and domestic diesels. They're really good at what they do. They're open Monday through Friday. They sell parts 24 hours a day at their website. So if you want a programmer or a chip, or you want to know what kind of exhaust is available, then Strictly Diesel's website would be a great place to go. Again, Strictly Diesel, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak in North Phoenix, good place. If you have diesels, light truck, foreign and domestic, they can handle it. Let's go back to Larry. Larry, you had one other question.
Sure.
Go ahead, sir.
The only thing that I wanted to try and clarify is the guy that took it apart and got the linkage working again, he didn't say anything about the forks being bent, but he also qualified he's not an expert on manual transmissions, especially Honda. So it sounds like basically what your thought is more like the way it's being driven than anything inherently wrong.
Okay. I can answer the issue about forks. The forks are within the transmission. He couldn't see those.
Okay.
So we were stuck in between a couple of gears. And by manipulating the forks, by manipulating the shifter, he lucked out. And he got it out of stuck part or no part, and he got it to work good. Most of us old gray-haired guys know how to do that as well, but it's a temporary, at best, fix. It's not an inherent problem. I think the problem, and with all due respect, I think the problem is the 20-year-old kid with a hot rod Honda. I mean,
well, that's kind of, I usually agree with it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. What?
We saw one come in. I was beginning to say it before the break. It was a RAV4, and she said it was smoking at stoplights. and it's just been smoking at stoplights, but she's continued to drive it. Well, it came in, and the clutch was completely just disintegrated.
Oh, my God. She's got to show me a picture.
I'm showing him a picture right now. And so, anyways, I, you know, all the guys are just cannot even believe how bad this is.
How did she drive it in here?
Well, she towed it in.
Okay.
Because she had been driving it for 6 months, smoking at stoplights. Okay. And so, long story short, come to find out, in the last 25,000 miles, she's put three clutches in it.
Okay.
And she got it from her dad. So he never had this problem in 80,000 miles, and then now...
Got three clutches.
Yeah.
So so perhaps some driver training with a manual transmission,
sure,
would be appropriate. But the picture you showed me, the bell housing is filled with asbestos, and both sides of the clutch are metal to metal.
Yeah.
So there is no asbestos left on the clutch.
Yeah.
So it's wiped out completely, 100%. It's God knows how she drove it.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, let's move on. Richard, thank you for holding, Richard, and Kevin, you too. Richard, you're next. How can I help you?
Thanks, Mark. I always wanted to talk to this radio show, and I'm really happy to hear you. It's a good show. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, on that comment, that guy had that banging noise that he couldn't seem to find or get rid of.
Uh-huh.
I had a similar problem on my Silverado. I bought a Z71 from my buddy. It was a year 2000.
Okay.
And it has the 5.3 V8. Motor in it.
Okay.
And it was like, in I read up on it, and it inherently had the tappet noise and that kind of thing when you first started it up. So I looked at because my buddy had taken care pretty good care of it and everything. It's just a total cherry, man. I got 70,000 miles on it when I bought it in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's still brand new. It's like 120,000 on it now. But I changed my oil. I went from 530 weight to a 1030 weight, and then I put full synthetic in there, and that seemed to the noise went away. Now I have a little bit of a tapping noise in the morning when it's cold, and I noticed when I went out there and I could hear it, and I didn't think about it, but it sounds like it's the power steering pump, the little rotor that goes around. If it goes low, then it starts. You can hear the
okay.
Pump.
No, if it was the power steering pump, you could sit in the car, you could listen to the noise, and you would take and spin the steering wheel left and right, and it would change. I don't know that I've ever heard a power steering pump make any kind of noise like that. The pump is either not going to work or it's going to work. So it's not going to be a banging noise, but the 5.3 does have a camshaft problem. And we get clatter out of it when we start wearing. It's got roller lifters, and we wear out the roller lifters, and then we start eating up the lobes. There's two things that happen.
Minute.
We get a clatter noise, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We're shedding metal like crazy, and at the same time, we're eating up everything, and we'll have a drivability problem because, again, we don't have the valves opening and closing in the synchronization we need them, as well as how long the duration. Your problem by going from a 530 to a 1030 is not a problem for high mileage cars, but that could have been the catalyst to make your car clatter in the morning where it didn't, or it clatter in the morning because it didn't before with the 530, and that's because it 530 flows like a 5-weight when it's cold, and
right,
of course,
no, but it clattered even worse when the 530 is in there. So I'm
yeah.
saying that,
okay.
that clatter, it went away. That's not the same noise at all. That part of the tappet thing went away, or the camshaft. Now, a symptom was, is I looked down in the power steering unit in the pump, and I noticed that the fluid is, like, black, so it's not, like, clear.
Okay, well, if you have a noise associated with the power steering, I'm trying to drive this point home to you. It's
uh-huh.
going to be power steering related, which means it's steering wheel related. So if you were to put your hand on top of the power steering pump where the cap is, or grab a hold of the fluid housing, you'd be able uh-huh. to feel a bad rotor. But I'm going to change your question and say this. Mark, when was the last time you had a noise from a power steering pump? And the answer might very well have been, I don't remember one in the last 10 years. Now, there is a difference here because the bracket can break on the power steering pump. And it could make a noise when you turn it right or left, but it's not the pump. It's the brackets broken. So, how you would figure that out is you'd put a big bar, and you would pry on the bracket, and the noise would come and go, depending on the position of the bar, as you pushed the broken part away from itself or pushed it towards itself. Then you would know the bracket's broken. And that would never go away. That would be there all the time. But I got to run because I'm up against a break. And, Kevin, please stay there because we'll be back right after this. Because that's a good thing. So let me tell you real quick about Action Auto Repair. We actually talked about Action a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Action is up at I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner. He served North Phoenix for a very long time, since 1983. Tom, I know personally. I know of his character. I know of his integrity. I know that he's honest. And on top of all of that, he's a fisherman. He's a world-class fisherman. So if you like to fish, you get an oil change, you make sure Tom's there, and you sit in the lobby and talk fish with him. That's the easy part. And if you want, you can tell him Mark Salem will pick up the oil change bill. He'll laugh, but he'll still make you pay for it. But Tom at Action, I-17 in Deer Valley, he's a good guy. Kevin, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I'm calling on behalf of my father. Can't make it to the phone, so hopefully you got all the answers to the questions you might ask. But I'm calling about a company called Lab One. Wondering if you've ever heard of it. They do oil analysis.
Yes.
Yes.
Do you guys recommend them? Are they a reputable company?
We don't use them. We've developed a relationship with another company, but tell me what the situation is. Why are you asking these questions?
So he's got a 2013 Duramax, and he noticed that the oil might have been just a little higher than it was when he filled it last, and he doesn't know if he's just seeing things or something's leaking in there. So he wanted to send it in and get it tested. He's looking at Lab One.
Okay. Well, that's something I would think any lab would be able to handle. I think he's just jumped from step one to step 47. I mean, he has skipped a lot in the middle.
How many miles does the vehicle have?
30,000.
Yeah. I mean, we've just...
2013.
I think that's a 12-quart system, something around there. I don't have you on, but just shake your head. I think it's a 12-quart system. And I'm not quite sure how long he lost the oil. I don't know if it was 5,000 or 10,000 miles. I mean, that thing could run 10,000 miles on an oil change.
Yeah, you said it's over full, right?
Yeah, it's higher than he thinks he filled it last time.
Okay, well,
I don't know if it's over full or it's just higher on the dipstick than it was.
Okay, I'm unless the oil is milky. I'm going to turn you on now, Mr. Ford guy. Unless the oil's milky, which would indicate coolant, and it would be a green tint or it would be an orange tint.
That's correct. Well, a lot of it depends on who did the oil change. Did he do the oil change? Did someone else do the oil change? How long did they let it sit before they made sure that the engine oil was full? How long is he letting it sit before he checks the oil?
Okay.
If you do the oil change and you put 12 quarts in it, start it up, fill the filter, let it run for a minute, shut it off, walk around 30 seconds later and check the dipstick, and it's like, oh, I'm a quart low. Put a quart in it. Well, after 10 minutes, when all that oil finally gets back down to the sump, you're overfilled. And it depends, too, same way, is when are you checking? It needs to sit for at least 10 minutes before you check the oil level.
Let me pose this to you, okay? He's got an injector leaking, okay? So he's diluting the oil to some extent. He's diluting the oil. What other symptom would he have if he had a fuel contamination?
Well, there'd be drivability issues. There might be a hard start until he builds up the fuel pressure again.
Mm-hmm.
There possibly could be black smoke.
Or white smoke.
But it's a 2013 with 30,000 miles.
I think this all has to do with the way they're filling and checking the oil. There's certain time frames that you have to pay respect for.
Well, that's what I mean. He jumped a bunch of steps.
Right.
And we've never seen that before. We've never seen anybody think about that it grows on the dipstick. And there's just too many other questions. But if he wants, here's the deal. One oil lab would tell you if the presence of an abundance of fuel or coolant, right?
Exactly.
But in order to determine metal, you have to have what we call a trend analysis. So you have to do an oil sample at 5,000, then you do another oil sample at 5,000, and then you look at the aluminum and the brass and all the metal content, and you don't want to see any growth between the 5 and the 10,000 sample. That's what we typically use oil for. Real quick, not too long ago, we screwed up an oil change really bad. And through the grace of God, the customer figured out that we messed up and shut the motor off before it trashed the motor. So we took that and we fixed the We fixed the filter we put on wrong, and we got everything situated. And the customer was obviously concerned and said, you know, well, Mark, what happens in 30 days if the engine fails? And I said, I want you to come back in 1,000. We're going to do an oil sample. We're going to do another one at 2, and we're going to do another one at 3. If we're shedding metal, it's my fault. I'll fix the motor. I'll fix it or I'll replace it. But if we're not shedding metal, then that should put you in a comfort zone that says the aluminum number, the brass number, the Babbitt number, the iron number, they're all the same.
Yeah, you need that initial test to set your baseline.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why they call it trend analysis. So that's okay. What we would use an oil lab for. We wouldn't really use the oil lab for this.
So two things. Check the oil when after it's been sitting for 10 minutes.
I would say at least 10 minutes.
And if it's a little bit over full, is there any... Is it going to cause any damage?
No. The best way to check that is if you think it's going to cause damage because it's overfilled, start it up, run it, or next time you stop it, immediately get out and check the oil. If the oil is aerated, if there's bubbles on the dipstick, then that is a problem.
Okay, so I would say do all of that before you do any
oil
lab
analysis.
Work.
And notice he said it growed. It not necessarily a full mark. It's a little bit above the ad, and the next time he checked it, it's higher than a little bit above the ad. Well, so we got this growth issue that's doing it.
And that's good with money, but not with oil.
And Eddie Caruso just walked into the studio. He's a Ford guy. He has no business talking about a damn Chevrolet or a Duramax. But I put a headset on him, and that was a mistake. So let's move on. Thank you very much, Kevin. Dan, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark.
Hi.
Hey, Mark. I got a 2015 Toyota Tacoma, and I have a very slow coolant leak. I got 105,000 miles on it. Took it to the dealer, was having some other warranty work done, and asked them to check it, and they said they didn't see any signs of a coolant leak. I asked them if they pressure tested it. They said no, so I asked them to do that. They can't find anything, but it basically my coolant bottle drains in about 4 months. And I'm just wondering, is it like reasonable to expect them to be able to find something like that, something that slow?
Well, I think we need to focus on the bottle being empty and forget the leak. I'm going to think out loud here. I'm looking at you, Eddie.
Okay.
This thing has the ability to draw coolant in, but it's not repressurizing it. It's not passing the coolant back. We should have hot coolant going into the overflow, and then at nighttime when you shut it off, we're going to suck that coolant back in and fill the radiator up. So we have this back and forth of the coolant.
Correct.
So we're drawing it out, but we're not drawing it in. I would think that a radiator cap would be the appropriate place to go on this thing first, fill it up with coolant. But if they pressure tested it like they said they did, and they didn't lose any pressure over 20 or 30 minutes, then we have to. And the only difference between the pressure test and him driving it is the radiator cap, because we take the radiator cap off to pressure test the system.
Right. And I guess the other question, too, is how large is the capacity of the overflow? Because obviously when you get the hot coolant going into the overflow, we're going to have some evaporation of the water. The coolant's not going to evaporate, but the water will. So at a 50-50 mix, we're going to lose some water.
Yeah.
So after 4 months, I don't know if I'd be really that concerned about it. This was a 2015?
Yeah, mm-hmm. A 2015 with 100,000 miles on it.
And he's having warranty work done on it? I want to go to that dealer.
It's my extended warranty.
Oh, okay.
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 All right. I think if I were you, I'd go down to an auto parts store and I'd buy a Stant radiator cap that's appropriate for your truck. I would take the coolant bottle and I'd fill it to the top. It's going to spit some out. I don't care, but I want it to find its own level. So if I fill it up all the way and it gets hot, it's going to pass it in. It's going to overflow the jug. I don't care. But I'm going to let it find its own level. So when it's hot, the level's high. When it's cold, the level's low. There should be a hot and a cold mark on the can. And that would be the easiest way, as far as I can say.
Well, and the other question I think is that with this many miles on a 2015, why is the coolant level only being checked every 4 months?
Yeah.
If it goes through that much, or, you know, empties the overflow in 4 months.
Yeah.
Check it once a month.
But here's something else. You don't have any problem with intermittently this thing has an engine miss, and after you rev it 5 or 6 times, it goes away, right?
No, runs perfect.
Okay, and you've checked the oil cap, and there's no moisture in it. So we don't have a blown head gasket. We're not feeding oil or coolant into the engine. So we have to either have a leak at the overflow, we have a leak to the hose at the overflow, or we have a bad cap. if they pressurized it like they said they did and held pressure. If he puts a pressure on it and he walks away for 10 minutes and comes back and it's still holding pressure, I would want my guys to not do that. I would want them to go to lunch or go to the bathroom for as long as they spend in there. We have lots of time to be able to let the pressure test just simmer.
Yeah.
So
I got a very iffy feeling when they did the pressure test. They acted like I was asking something out of the ordinary for them to do a pressure test in the first place.
Well, here's the bad news. The bad news is the service writer went back to the technician, and he's an old grizzly son of a gun. And they said, he wants to know if you did a pressure test. And he said, tell him I did a pressure test. And so the little girl walks back up in front. She says, yeah, I did a pressure test. But he just didn't like being told that, so he snapped her head off, and you didn't get the bite, too.
Yeah, and the other issue is doing a pressure test. There are so many different scenarios that it may leak when it's the engine is at 110 degrees, 160 degrees. It may leak as it cools down, as the hoses collapse or expand.
Right, so, but if the cap's a 13-pound cap and I put 16 pounds in there, I'm probably going to find a leak.
It really depends sometimes with the thermal expansion of hoses and other components.
I'll grant you, but let me change my question. Does my success rate increase when
yes.
I blow it up by 3 pounds or 4 pounds? Okay. We've been known to do that.
Yeah, stress test.
Yeah. We've been known to do that. Hey, thank you very much, Dan. Good luck to you, buddy. All righty. Kurt's Automotive is a good place. Kurt's Automotive is I-17 in Bell, northeast corner. Kurt and Jeff and Eric. Well, Kurt's a good guy. And Eric's a good guy. But Jeff is kind of iffy. All right? I sent somebody over there the other day and told him to have a used car check over. And I jokingly said to DJ, his name is DJ, tell him to put it on my bill. I got a bill the other day for $11,462.
They for said, a used car check?
Yeah, used car check. But the guy took home 144 cases of carb cleaner. He took two 55-gallon drums of 1540 synthetic diesel oil, or 540. And so they have all this stuff. And so I wrote him back and said, hey, you know where you can put that receipt, don't you? So anyway, Kurtz is a good guy. I-17 Bell, northeast corner. I've known him for a very long time. And he between Eric and Jeff and Kurt, they're all three ASC masters. You should be able to get your car fixed there. We've got a caller. Who's next?
Hal is next.
Hal, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hi, good morning. I took my wife's Mazda. It's a Mazda 2. Took it into Jiffy Lube. The technician told me, he says, say, this car takes 0 to 20 oil, which I've never heard of, and he said he didn't have any. And I said, well, I put 520 in. What's the scoop on that?
Well, you'll be okay with 520. I would prefer that you find a shop that's going to pour 020 for you, because that's what the manufacturers call for. But to be perfectly honest, in the big scheme of things, what you did will not hurt your car for the next 5,000 miles when you're going to have an oil change done again. The 020 gives you better fuel economy, gives you better protection, and now we know that we don't need a 30 on the end number, 40 on the end number, 50 on the end number. These newer cars like sewing machine oil, and they don't like peanut butter, and I'm giving you the two, you know, the wide open piece, the wide open viewpoint. So a 020 has a consistency of water, and a 1030, a 1040, a 1050, a 2050, that's peanut butter. So we just know that the engine will last longer, cool faster, and you'll get better fuel economy with the right oil. And as a result, at our shop, we give them the right oil. But I don't know how many kinds we have, not brands, but we've got 3, 4, 5, 6 different weights.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, we cover the whole spectrum.
And we cover the whole spectrum. So perhaps just find a different shop. Andy, thanks for spending your Saturday with me.
Sure.
Eddie, thanks for coming to work in your pajamas. And I don't know where you came from, but it wasn't home because you smell like perfume, and I'll just leave that alone. So he lives in the northeast of Northwest Valley. He lives 55 miles from here. He just walks in the door and he smells like perfume. What kind of a thing can you think? We'll see you next Saturday.